everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make informed decisions regarding your health and well-being. And as always, I'm just so glad you're joining me today. And as you know, if you've been a long-time listener to my show, we have these fantastic in-depth conversations, and it's a chance to really go deep into topics, into issues. So it allows you to have a greater depth and breadth of whatever topic we are discussing. And always the goal is to empower you with the knowledge so you can make choices and decisions and understand more about what is required to move through your life in a way that is filled with health and joy, vitality, and love. I have just a few announcements to make before we get into a really important topic today. First of all, let's see, if you have not yet liked me over at Facebook, please go to What Women Must Know because I post the shows there. So all the archived interviews are available for this show and my other show called The Love Code, as well as visiting me on my website, which is drcherylselman.com. And if you do that, then not only will you get the archive shows, but a lot more information and blogs, and I have all sorts of things up my sleeve for this year and next, so I hope you will be part of my community there. And the two announcements I have, and I will fill people in as we go along. First of all, I am taking a very special group of people to Costa Rica, February 9th. Many of you who've been listening know that I have been visiting a unique center of healing and transformation called Rhythmia Life Advancement Center. It is the only medically licensed plant medicine center in the world. So we work with the traditional plant medicine that goes back 4,000 years in the Amazon, as well as providing a really amazing healing week for deep, deep transformation and quantum leaps. The thing about this amazing experience in Costa Rica is that because I have a very special long-term relationship, this is the fourth year I will be taking a group with me to Rhythmia. I have a very deep discount that the Rhythmia people very generously have given to me and anyone who is going with me. So if you are interested in learning more, and I'll be sharing some more fascinating information and information from people who have had their lives and relationships and health totally transformed and healed and miracles, 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 please get in touch with me and I'll share more with you. That's the week of February 9th. And the other announcement, I do like to travel and explore and have adventures. So October 19th to 31st, this is 2020, this is a year from now, I will be taking a small group of people, it will be about 20 people, who will be going with me on a pilgrimage or an adventure to Bhutan. Bhutan, one of the truly and only Buddhist countries remaining in the world. You may not have heard of Bhutan, but it is this phenomenal, majestic, healing place between China and India. It's kind of on the foothills of the Himalayas. It's a kingdom of Bhutan, which is the only pure Buddhist country in the world. They have polled their people, and there is a 97% response of people who experienced happiness. They have a department minister of happiness. So it is a truly unique experience. So anyway, if that experience calls to you, let me know. That is in a year, but because there are only a limited number of visas that the kingdom gives out, there's only a limited number of hotel spaces. You have to commit earlier than most programs. So it's a truly amazing place. You know, there are temples, 1,000-year-old temples, sitting on the side of cliffs of these mountains. And you get to go there which is probably an experience in itself. I have never been. I really look forward. I know that people who have been to Bhutan said it's one of the most amazing experiences they've ever had in their lives. So I'm going, and if you are called to come to either Bhutan with me, October 2020, or to Rythmia in Costa Rica, February 9th, 2020, please get in touch, because I'd love to have you join me if it feels right to you. Okay, so enough with all of those announcements. I want to say that we are here in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and as you know, that this is a month I dedicate to having conversations with people who have profound and inspiring and healing messages related to healing and preventing breast cancer and related women's cancers as well. So we've included ovarian cancer and such. And it's a really important month for us to delve deeply into the conversation about breast cancer and support women, and also, of course, men are now being diagnosed with breast cancer, how to navigate, how to learn, how to be supported. And today we're talking about a unique organization called SHARE, and it is a breast and ovarian cancer nonprofit support organization that everyone really needs to know about. I didn't even know about it. So this is profound for an essential resource for any person who is faced with this or may know of someone who is faced with a diagnosis. And my guest today is Victoria Goldberg, who, I'm going to tell you about her. Victoria Goldberg, for the past 5 years, has been living with metastatic breast cancer. This type of cancer is not considered curable. She has been originally diagnosed with early stage cancer in 2005 and was treated and moved on with her life. For the following 9 years, she had no time to be sick, and cancer was the last thing on her mind. Unfortunately, a January 2014 CT scan showed that her cancer had come back and had spread to her liver and bones. Victoria had an exceptionally good response to her treatments and physically recovered pretty quickly. The more difficult problem was coming to grips with a new reality. She was not yet ready to give up, for the fear of dying was all-consuming. A big part of her life and how she defined herself had been her cancer. Prior to her diagnosis, Victoria was an executive director in the corporate IT department of J.P. Morgan. The side effects of the treatment forced her to stop working earlier than she had planned. Without her job, she was lost and depressed. Getting involved with SHARE turned out to be the answer. It gives her structure and purpose. It feels right. And she has helped start SHARE's dedicated helpline for women living with metastatic breast cancer. It operates 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, by peers living with metastatic breast cancer, and serves as an ever-growing metastatic community across the United States and Canada. She never forgets that she is living with an advanced disease, but it's no longer on the forefront of her life. What an amazing woman. So it's such a pleasure to have Victoria Goldberg on the call today. I like Victoria. I love that name for Victorious. So, Victoria, it's a pleasure to have you, and welcome to What Women Must Know.
Well, thank you so much. I love my story. I would like to meet a person like that. It's amazing. And also, I would love to go to Bhutan with you. I've never heard of a minister of happiness. I mean, that alone. You know, just for that alone, you got to go there. Sounds wonderful.
Come along, Victoria. It's going to be an amazing experience with amazing
sign
people from all over
up.
The world.
All right,
you're in.
Absolutely, sign me up. I'm the first one. Okay.
So, Victoria, your story, you've been on such a journey. So why don't you share more about your personal journey and what has transpired for you as a result of this diagnosis, what you're learning, and your real purpose and passion at this point in life.
Yeah, well, it's actually an interesting story, and it's a long one, but I'll try to make it brief. It started, as you so beautifully said, in the beginning of 2005. I was 44 years old. I was living a really busy life, extremely busy life, and never thought of breast cancer, never thought it would happen to me, because like almost everyone, probably almost everyone who's listening to this, we think that breast cancer is something related to the family disease, that it's a genetic condition, and in fact, it is not. Most people diagnosed with breast cancer have no family history of breast cancer. I think it's a really high number, maybe 85%. I should have looked up the numbers, but I have not. But it's a very, very large number of people who get diagnosed with breast cancer without any family history at all. And I'm one of those. I've never had anybody in my family, anyone I know, in fact, who had breast cancer. And at 44, I didn't think it was even an issue, because I've heard, and we all hear about things that we don't quite know, but we hear about them, that breast cancer is the disease of age. So young people, well, 44, I guess relatively young people, are not in danger. All wrong, all not true, and I'm a living example of that. So I started doing the annual mammograms as I was supposed to at 40, and I had had a mammogram 5 months prior to my regular visit to my doctor, who just did the usual breast exam, and she palpated something. She said, oh, no, it's nothing. It's probably nothing, but we would really need to try testing it, which we did. We biopsied it, and they told me in advance, don't worry, it's probably nothing. It's maybe 40% chance that it's something. So it turned out that it was something. It was stage 1 breast cancer. The biopsy told me that it was of a very, very aggressive type. It was known as triple-positive breast cancer, which has the three receptors that feed cancer. It's estrogen, progesterone, and HER2. That's a protein that develops on the cell and makes the cell grow too fast, too much, too quickly. So it's a rare and aggressive disease. And in the past, it was considered poor prognosis disease, even for people with early stage cancer like mine. The odds were not as good, although they didn't tell me that at all at the time. So people with my type of cancer, usually stage 1 cancers are considered less aggressive and less, and they don't require chemotherapy as much as later stage cancers. But because of the type of my cancer, I was told right away that I was going to have chemotherapy. And I was given a choice of either a lumpectomy or a mastectomy. I tried lumpectomy first. That didn't quite work out right. So I went for mastectomy with reconstruction. So I did everything I was supposed to, actually, and more. My husband, who was very, very helpful in researching and figuring out what was going on, and I, as I said, I had no history of breast cancer in my family, had no friends with breast cancer. I was like a deer in the headlights. I had no idea what was happening to me. I had no idea what's going on. I was basically, I thought I was going to, you know, I wasn't going to make it, the big C. But my husband had done, he was a lot more level-headed, so he had done a lot more research, and he found out that there was a new drug that had been approved for metastatic advanced cancer, people with my type of cancer. It was called Herceptin, and was not yet approved for people with early stage cancers. But all the indications were that this drug would be good for early stage people as well. So we started talking to different oncologists, and most oncologists in New York area said that yes, they think it's going to be approved. It sounds like it's going to be a good drug, but they won't give it yet because it's not FDA approved and they don't know yet. But so we pretty much decided that that I was going to go and do the regular standard standard of care treatment, which was at that time Adriamycin, Cytoxan, and Taxol, and hope for the best. One day I was sitting in my room, and my husband had brought all these early cancer stage books. You know, this was 2005, so this was a little before the big internet, so Dr. Google was not yet available. So most of us still read printed books, which is so hard to believe. So my husband brings me a number of books, and most of them I didn't quite like. They didn't speak to me. But there was one book I was reading, and it just seemed right. The writer was expressing the whole history and the journey and what to expect and what the outcomes are in such a way that it just spoke to me. And right while I'm reading this book, a friend calls, and she tells me, you know, I have a name for you. And she gives me the name of a doctor. And I look at the cover of the book I'm reading, and it's the same name. So, of course, this was a sign, right?
Yes.
You mean,
absolutely.
It is a sign. So, of course, right when I get off the phone, I call him, and we go to see him, and he tells me, his name is Dr. Yasha Hirschout. He's the most amazing, the most magnificent oncologist in New York City. I love him. So he talks to us for a very long time, and we mention Herceptin, and he says, but of course, I have no doubt that this is going to be a breakthrough drug for people with HER2-positive disease. So, yes, I will give it to you off-label, which was allowed at the time, and no problem. So, I mean, this was decided. So I went with him, and I traveled from Wayne, New Jersey, to Manhattan the whole, I don't know how many months it was, but I did. And I had the standard of care plus this amazing targeted therapy, Herceptin, and then a year of Herceptin after I was finished with my chemo treatments. So, but the funny thing is my drug Herceptin had been approved for early stage cancer right when I started. So he was so right. And it turned out to be the probably one of the biggest breakthroughs in breast cancer in the last 40 years. In fact, when there was a conference at ASCO, American Society of Clinical Oncologists, that's the biggest conference for the clinical oncologists in the U.S., when they presented the results of the trial for early stage people, the audience, which is the audience made up of oncologists who usually don't react to anything, they got up and applauded. My oncologist was there. He said he had never seen anything like that. So, and it over the years, it proved to be the most incredible drug for people of my type of cancer. It turned my type of cancer from poor prognosis, the death sentence, to a good cancer to have. Well, there is no good cancer, but this is the cancer. If you were to have cancer, this is the one to have. All
because it was responsive to the treatment.
Because it was the special thing about this drug, and they're coming up with more and more and more drugs of that type, it's a targeted therapy drug. It's not chemo. Unlike chemo is a systemic treatment. So chemo kills cancer cells as well as good cells. It doesn't discriminate. It knows that it's going after quickly dividing cells. And quickly dividing cells could be good cells as well. Our skin cells divide very quickly. Our hair follicles, all of that. So chemo doesn't discriminate. It goes after everything that doesn't look normal. But targeted therapy, unlike chemo, they are targeted specifically for a cancer cell. In this case, for a cancer cell that has this receptor HER2, and my cancer has that. So that's why it makes such a huge difference, because it doesn't give you the side effects of the regular chemo treatment, and it's a lot more effective. So that was the first targeted therapy drug for breast cancer. Since then, we've come up with many more, and we can talk about this later. But Herceptin was the first one, and I got it all. So I thought, well, look, I mean, I had the doctor that was sent to me from God knows where, and the treatment that I got, the state-of-the-art treatment and more, and I treated it very aggressively, and I was very fit. I was a long-distance runner. I exercised like crazy. I watched my weight my whole life. So I was good. I was good to go. I went back to my crazy, crazy 12-hour work schedule. And after about 2 or 3 years, I forgot that I had had cancer. I thought it was, you know, it was just bump on the road, and I'm done with it. But I was wrong. 9 years later, to the day, I was diagnosed on Valentine's Day in 2005, to the day, on Valentine's Day of 2014, I don't like this holiday, as you can imagine, I was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. I had had symptoms, but I ignored them. Because a lot of us have, you know, there was nothing special about my symptoms. I had nausea, I had GI problems. A lot of people with stressful jobs tend to have these from time to time, so I didn't pay much attention to it. But in fact, it was, those were the meds speaking to me. Those were liver meds. So by the time I had my diagnosis, my liver meds were completely out of control. I had basically my whole liver covered with meds. And that happened very quickly, too, because I had gone to see my doctor twice a year for 9 years, and he had taken blood markers and cancer markers, and everything was good in May. But by February, I had liver full of meds. The biggest med was about 8 centimeters, which is huge. And that's what I found out. And of course, like everyone else, what do you do when you find out that you have metastatic cancer? You go to the internet, and you look at the statistics. And it says, with liver involvement, 1 to 3 years maximum. So, you know, death sentence right then and there. My doctor didn't look at it this way. He was a lot more optimistic. He told me, we will work with it. We'll see what happens. There are new treatments available. We'll fight it, which I don't like military terminology, but in this case, I guess it works. And he also told me that there was a trial that just finished that showed some exceptional responses in the metastatic community for people with HER2-positive cancer. So I've been lucky twice. First I got Herceptin, and then I got this. So this trial, it was known as the Cleopatra trial. It combined, in the metastatic setting, it combined Taxol, which is a chemotherapy or Taxotere, with Herceptin, the same drug I took 9 years prior to that, and a new targeted therapy called pertuzumab or Perjeta. It was a completely new targeted therapy, again, for people with my type of cancer. So that combination of three drugs was miraculous. After 6 months, I had no evidence of disease. We don't say remission anymore. We never actually did. In breast cancer setting, we don't like to talk about remissions because cancer can come back after 20 years or more. So we say no evidence of disease or no evidence of active disease. In 6 months, my liver tumors melted away. But I continued with the same protocol for another 5 years, actually. So I was on chemo for 5 years, and I'm finishing my sixth year, and I'm still, even though I dropped the chemo component, now I'm only on the targeted therapies, I'm still what we call the first line of treatment. So I'm doing exceptionally well, and I'm so grateful. I really am grateful to the research that's been done and is being done in the field of breast cancer, in the area of breast cancer. So as you mentioned, it was physically I recovered really quickly. I mean, within 6 months I was doing well, but mentally I was completely lost because I had defined myself through my career. I had career goals. I was very ambitious about my job. And then in one day I lost it because with my with the side effects and the chemo treatments, I couldn't really continue working. So I stopped working. I was living in the suburbs. I was lost. I really was absolutely lost. So after about 2 years, I started waking up. I realized that maybe I will not be going to the cemetery any day soon, that I may have a little more living to do. And my husband and I had done what we had wanted to do our whole life. We sold our house and went to New Jersey and moved to the Upper East Side in Manhattan, and I found a support group at the Memorial Sloan Kettering that was open to people who were not treated there. It was a metastatic support group. And I actually have to tell you the story when I came to that support group. I've always been kind of leery about support groups in general, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to be in a support group setting. Especially with a metastatic disease, you have to go to that with eyes wide open because you know that you will hear some things you may not want to hear, and the outcomes may not be as rosy as mine. But I went to this group, and I walk into the room, and there are about 15, 20 women sitting around a conference table. A facilitator comes in, she says hello to everyone, and she starts the usual. Let's go around the table, tell me what's happening with your life. So the first woman says, and they're all young women under 45. The first one says, oh, I'm training for a marathon. Okay, I said, that's wonderful. Then the second one, the very second one says, yes, I'm doing okay. I had a little bit of a progression, but I'm training for a huge bike-a-thon in Cape Cod. Okay, then the third one. She says, I'm having a baby next week. And I look at her. She's flat as a board. She doesn't look pregnant at all. So I'm thinking, okay, this is a mental institution. I don't know what I'm doing here. But she was actually having a baby through a surrogate, and she was metastatic. So these people, it was amazing to me, these people were living full lives with a metastatic disease, with the terminal metastatic disease. They were continuing to have a fairly good quality of life, and they were living it to the fullest. That really inspired me. There were some bad things there too, but these three stories just totally inspired me. And one of these women became a really good friend, and she introduced me to Cher. I've never heard of Cher like you, which is actually quite a sad thing because Cher has been around for over 40 years. It's a national nonprofit organization. It's a little engine that nobody knows about, actually, and that's very upsetting to me. because we do an amazing work for women and men who are going through the worst times of their lives, the diagnosis of cancer. And had I known about CHAIR's existence when I was diagnosed the first time, and had I known about CHAIR's existence when I was diagnosed the second time even more so, that would have made such a huge difference. When you can talk to somebody who knows exactly what you're going through, who understands what you're going through, who can explain to you what will happen to you, what to expect, who can just talk to you and listen to your issues. I mean, that's enormous. And I didn't know about this. Nobody told me that organizations like this existed. So I joined CHAIR first as a helpline volunteer for the Early Stage Breast Cancer Helpline. And I worked there for a couple of years, but from day one I knew that we needed a different helpline. We needed a helpline for people with my diagnosis, with advanced stage 4 diagnosis, because the needs are different. There are many more issues that women with stage 4 cancer have than the earlier stage cancer people. And for the volunteers, and we're a peer-run organization, so everybody who works on the helpline is a cancer survivor. So for early stage people, it's not only very difficult to talk to metastatic patients, it's also they also can't relate. So we started a dedicated, it wasn't very hard because CHAIR is an amazing organization. They were very receptive. So they agreed to try a metastatic helpline. First, we had a soft launch with just one day a week. But then, it was clear that one day a week doesn't make a helpline. So we expanded. They didn't believe that I would be able to find enough volunteers to cover a few days, but we did. We found enough people to cover 6 days a week, 3 shifts a day. So it's like 18 people, maybe even more, all metastatic, all living their lives, and all ready to help others with the same diagnosis. And we've been running this helpline practically this whole year, and it's an amazing thing. Every caller who calls us always says the same thing. Oh, I didn't know you existed. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I found you. And it's a two-way street. It helps us as well. You know, it's not only we help them, they help us too, because it makes my day when a woman calls and cries and she's despondent with her diagnosis, obviously. And then if I can make her smile at the end or laugh at the end of the conversation, it actually made my day, not just hers. I know she'll be upset 10 minutes later. But for those 10 minutes that she was able to forget and laugh, that makes a difference, makes a huge difference. So I'm very excited about this helpline, but we really need to get the word out because there are so many out there, especially in the rural communities, who have no access to any support. You know, they probably never met another person with stage 4 cancer. So so it's important for them to learn about us because we, in addition to the 6-day-a-week helpline, we also offer a lot of web-based programs, educational programs, as well as support groups. You know, there are a lot of support groups out there, but there are very few metastatic support groups. And if you live in away from a big cancer center, I can bet your life that there isn't going to be a support group there. So having a telephone support group makes a big difference for people who live probably in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So that's where we are. And I probably spoke way too long. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not at all. But I want to give that website, first of all, because, we need to just remind everyone this is a great nonprofit supportive organization, as you
Absolutely.
Were saying. People can call in, they can talk to people who've been through it, or you can go online and learn more and get more information. And the website to go to is sharecancersupport.org. We're a nonprofit, so it's sharecancersupport.org. And there's also a helpline, so why don't we give that number out? Do you have that number in front of you?
Of course. I only use it about 50 times a day. It's a toll-free number. It's 844-275-7427. 844-275-7427. And when the main menu comes on, there are many different options, but there are two options for the breast cancer. So there is an option for early stage breast cancer. That's one. And then if you press 6, that would take you directly to the metastatic helpline, where everybody who would answer the phone would be a metastatic peer, including me. We also have different language helplines. We have an ovarian helpline, we have Chinese helpline, we have a very wide Latina program as well as the helpline, and I think we even have a Japanese helpline.
Wow. You know, I never heard of it. I mean, I'm obviously open to learning and understanding what resources are available for all these conditions and situations, but I never heard of SHARE before, so I'm so grateful to know about it because it sounds like the most wonderful organization for anyone who's dealing with breast
Yes.
cancer, ovarian cancer. And if people have other forms of cancer, can they call and get referred to other places that might support them?
So, yes, of course, we can certainly help, but there is also American Cancer Society that helps with all types of cancer. So if your call is diagnosed with non-women-specific breast cancers that we handle, American Cancer Society would be probably the best place to go first. We actually get a lot of referrals from ACS, American Cancer Society. I don't remember offhand their website, but it's very easily foundable. It's American Cancer Society, ACS.
Sure, yeah.
There's also Cancer Care.
Right. I mean, there are quite a number of organizations, and I should...
And collect
them all and offer them in one of our
right.
Interviews. With
right,
them.
Absolutely. But of course, they can always call us too, and we have a very extensive resource guide that we could help navigate people with whatever they want. We also have there's something I haven't mentioned, but I should. There is this whole world of medical trials that are very, very important, especially important for people with metastatic cancer. And sometimes it's very, very hard to navigate and find out. I mean, if you're treated at a good cancer center, your oncologist would probably be on top of what's happening in the trials out there. But a lot of people are not treated in major cancer centers. A lot of people are treated in their own local hospitals or private oncologists who may not be on top of what's happening in the medical trial world. So we are a good source of that information as well. We have on our website, we have a link to an application that helps people navigate a much, much easier way to navigate to what's available in the trials, and we can talk about it ourselves. We're all trained volunteers, so we try to stay, because we are, partly because we're living with this disease, so we need to know it for our own sake, and we need to be advocates of our own disease. We also like to learn, so we usually stay on top of what's happening in the metastatic world. We go to conferences. There are many conferences, actually. Coleman has become very active in doing metastatic specific conferences. And so we go to conferences. We also go to the oncologist conference for breast cancer oncologists in San Antonio. We also go to ASCO in Chicago. So we really stay on top of it. So we're a good source of information. We're not doctors, and we don't give medical advice, but we can help interpret the diagnosis. We can talk about side effects of different treatments because we've been through them ourselves. And we also have an idea of what questions to ask. So that's really... Yeah.
Well, very comprehensive. I just want to, I'm just looking at the stats that you sent me, and it said that approximately 155,000 people in the United States are living with metastatic breast cancer, and about 6 to 10% of people are stage 4 from their initial diagnosis, and it is estimated that 20 to 30% of all breast cancer diagnoses will become metastatic. So is metastatic considered... is it like an aggressive recurrence? Is that what is defined as metastatic?
Okay, let me explain this. And it's amazing, actually, that with all the pink awareness that we've had for I don't know how many years, the majority of the population doesn't know what metastatic is. It's not at all uncommon. I've seen some numbers that are staggering. How little people know about what metastatic disease is. So metastatic breast cancer is the only type of breast cancer that kills. When your cancer is still within your breast, even if it's invasive, if it's within your breast or the lymph nodes under your armpit, it's considered early stage cancer and you will never die from it. The only deadly type of breast cancer is stage 4 cancer or metastatic cancer or advanced cancer. It's the cancer that left the breast and set house in distant organs. So it could be very different places where it tends to go to, also depending on the type of breast cancer. All breast cancers are not the same. So some breast cancers like to settle in the bones. Some breast cancers like liver and lungs and brain. So there are different organs where it goes to. And once cancer cells reach those distant organs, it's still considered breast cancer. It's still breast cancer, but it's metastasis to different organs. Like when I was telling you about my original metastasis to my liver, it was not liver cancer. It was breast cancer with metastasis to my liver. So when you get treated for that, you're not treated from liver cancer. You're treated from breast cancer with metastatic lesions in your liver or in your brain or in your lungs. Anyway, it's still considered breast cancer. And breast cancer can metastasize at any time. You can have early stage diagnosis like I did. You can be treated. You think you're cured, but it could come back 5, 10, 15. There are people who have their cancers come back 20 years later. And somebody, I was just in the doctor's office a few weeks ago. I was getting an echocardiogram, and the technician, who's a medical professional, when she found out that I had stage 4 metastatic cancer, she could not understand how it is that I didn't have a lump in my breast. So I explained to her that I had had a lump in my breast 15 years ago, and it was removed successfully. But I guess for whatever reason, and they still don't know, there is still a lot of controversy about how metastases begin and where they begin. There have been different different ideas proposed, they still don't quite know how cancer spread. So most likely at the time when I was already, when I went through my treatments for the early stage cancer, there were some cancer cells that were circulating in my bloodstream and probably found some place and slept for 9 years, and something woke them up. And they became active after 9 years, and they managed to get to the liver and created a little community there that grew and grew and grew. And that makes it metastatic. This cancer is not curable. It's not curable. There is no cure. We say that it's treatable, but, you know, it's by no means a chronic disease. The median survival for metastatic breast cancer is still 1 to 3 years, really, no more than five. And
so what makes you so exceptional, Victoria?
I'm what's known as a as an exceptional responder. I don't know. This is.
Can I go back to something you said earlier in our conversation about being very, probably if you're working 12 hours a day, I'd call you a workaholic. I mean, that's
yes.
probably not a very nice term, but you know,
yeah,
you know, there's
exactly
a.
What I was.
You know, there's a saying in my profession as a naturopathic doctor. It's like you can't heal in the environment that got you sick.
Uh-huh.
So do you think that part of the lesson and the journey you've been on, and this is just kind of going back to your personal story, is that perhaps because you stayed in a workaholic environment and were under the same stresses and, you know, just long hours and God knows what was going on when you're in that level of senior position, that those conditions that you went back into as opposed to now contributed? Do you think that could be a possibility?
I think it is. And I've had many conversations and many arguments with many different people, including my oncologist, who doesn't believe my hypothesis, but I have no doubt that what you're saying is exactly right. It was a toxic environment, and I'm sure. I can't prove it, and I can't state it categorically, but I do feel that it had played a contributing role, and a lot of people in my situation agree with me. You know, they always give an example. They always give an example of Holocaust survivors. That's the usual thing, that there had been trials and studies done on Holocaust survivors, and apparently the rate of cancer among them was no higher than in the regular population. So I never really agree with that because first of all, the group of Holocaust survivors is already a very special group. So these are people who survived the most horrific situations. So they already there is something in them that makes them exceptional. So I don't necessarily agree that comparing them to the rest of the population makes any sense. And I honestly do believe that working the way I worked was not helpful, not at all. And now, and I'm glad you brought it up, now when I discovered Share, and I work, to be quite honest, I work for free now, probably the same number of hours. But I love what I do. I'm mm-hmm. passionate about what I do. It means a lot to me and brings a lot of positive reinforcement in my life. And it makes a difference. I like my job. I got paid well for it, but I never loved it. It was very stressful, especially the last year before I was diagnosed. And I do agree with you. I can't confirm it, but I hope there will be studies done. I really think that's something there's something that needs to be researched more.
Because when you are, like you said, you got paid well, and, you know, it was challenging, I'm sure, but it was like when you were not coming from your passion, from your joy, it changes your whole biochemistry, right? And
I know
stress is a driver for all chronic illnesses, including cancer, and the fact that you are on your mission now. You are living your passion. You are making a difference in the world. You love it. It fills you with vitality and energy and knowing that you can help others. And I mean, it really is, you really are on your spiritual purpose.
Yes, you're exactly right. It's absolutely true. This has been an eye-opener for me. I mean, I can't be grateful for having cancer. Obviously, I wish I didn't have it. But in some strange way, it helped me appreciate the world completely differently. I actually live every moment, and I enjoy it as much as I possibly can, unlike my old life when I lived from weekend to weekend, basically. I mean, had I known about this, maybe I would have made other choices when I was younger. But you know how we are.
I think that's the journey of life. I mean, that's how we learn and grow and evolve. You didn't know what you know now back then. You had to go through everything to get to the place where you're living from a very different, you know, very different perspective, a very different energy. You know, your whole life has transformed as a result. Not that, you know, you loved having it, and it's not like you wish that on anyone, but you worked with the process, you know. It became a catalyst for change in your life.
That's absolutely true.
And look where you are now, right?
Yes.
Look where you are now, doing something that really makes a difference in the world.
It
and there's nothing more gratifying, and there's nothing more healing than being able to live that way.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you, and, you know, and I always encourage my friends, my support group friends, my other metastatic friends, to come join me. Not because I really need their, I do need their help, but I think it's important for them the problem with having metastatic cancer, the problem with having a cancer, is that you lose control. You spin completely out of control. And your life becomes almost meaningless because you live for the cancer. But once you take control, and I feel like I did, it makes a big difference. Now, my life is not dictated by my cancer. It's there. I live with it. I get treated every 3 weeks. I will be treated for the rest of my life, but it's not on the forefront. Like I said, it's there, but I live my life the way I want to live it now.
And you have so much more joy in your heart.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I've made so many friends. On this journey, I've made so many friends. I have a friend who's sitting right next to me right now. She came to visit me from Montreal, Canada. And she and I would have never met her had I not been diagnosed with breast cancer. And the friends you make on this journey are the most amazing friends. You know, at our age, it's hard to make great friends. You know, we're so set in our ways. But when you become metastatic, you become more open to relationships and to connections, and the friends you make are amazing friends.
So let's give all that contact information again, so people can either write it down for themselves, or they have it, store it somewhere in case anyone should need it in the future, or for them to have this information and phone number now to share with other people who may not know about SHARE.
I mean, as you know, there are, in America, there are 3 million people living with breast cancer right now. So it's very likely that everyone knows somebody, except for me. I guess I didn't know anyone. But most people know somebody who has breast cancer, who will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And if they, I think that's the biggest help they can do for a friend or a relative who is diagnosed with breast cancer is to give our number, because there is nothing more important than getting information right when you're diagnosed, that when you're scared the most, when you're completely lost, to get to talk to somebody who can explain and who can tell a story, who can explain how and what's happening. I think that makes a huge difference, and I see this daily in my conversations with people. So right, so our website is sharecancersupport.org. Sharecancersupport.org. And the number for the helpline it's a toll-free number. It's 844-275-7427. 844-275-7427. There are many different helplines, so you will press 1. It will take you to our regular early-stage breast cancer helpline, and that one operates 7 days a week. But if you press 6, that will take you directly to the metastatic helpline. And if you happen to have early-stage breast cancer, you can call us too. We know we've been through that as well. So we can talk about anything. Not ovarian cancer so much, but we can talk about any type of breast cancer.
Well, Victoria, it's been such a pleasure and delight having you on the show. Thank you for sharing your journey with all of us. It's been such an inspiration. And thank you for letting us know about SHARE. I think it's a fantastic organization. People definitely need to know about it, so people can go to sharecancersupport.org to learn more about all the resources. And I just wish you a life filled with ever-growing joy, health, and love. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for letting me talk and talk and talk. And thank you for letting me talk about SHARE. And I'm so going with you next year to Bhutan.
Well, I look forward to that. Have fun. So
thank you
again, Victoria.
Bye-bye.
So, bye now. And for all you listeners, we've been listening and having a great conversation with Victoria Goldberg, who's one of the spokespersons and on staff there answering phones at SHARE. And again, sharecancersupport.org. So as always, thanks for listening. Join me again next week. Opt into my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. Dr. Cheryl Selman's my website. And as always, honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.